Hi there, Charles from the future with a little bit of context. So about 5 minutes into the upcoming episode, I'm going to go on a rant about the Acolyte trailer. And specifically, I'm going to go on a rant about the bad faith criticisms of the trailer, accusing it of quote-unquote breaking canon. Now, I'm not super clear about that when I start the rant. I kind of accidentally made it sound like anybody who was confused by the trailer or how it fit in with The Phantom Menace was all lumped into this same toxic category. I do clarify a little later in the rant that I'm specifically talking about the bad faith actors, people that are parroting the Star Wars theory line, people that are just using it as an excuse to bash the Acolyte trailer because they hate it, probably because they think it's woke, and that I'm not talking about people who really genuinely were confused. I did want to clarify that up front, just so nobody listens to that and thinks, oh, he's talking about me. I'm probably not. So don't worry. I did want to make that clear up front. That rant's going to turn out to be about the bad faith actors, not, I guarantee, anybody who's listening to this podcast. I do apologize for not being more clear when I started, but I wanted to make that clear up front. I hope y'all enjoy this episode on The Elder.
Welcome to the show, Gold Squadron Gays. It's the podcast where two Star Wars loving gays talk about and review their favorite Star Wars content while also being gay as hell. I'm your host, Bradley Brower.
I'm your other host, Charles Rogers, and I am a fool.
Are you?
Okay. I am. I am a fool, and I promised I would explain this when we got onto the air. So, Bradley, for the last 3 weeks, this is the third week in this running bit, I have been watching the third and final season of Young Royals on Netflix, as you are aware. And I was going to come on here, I was watching through the finale, which did make me cry. I did cry at the end of this show, because it did stick the landing. But when I went to just Google some more information about it, because whenever I finish one of these shows, I like to Google the cast list, and then Google interviews with the creatives, because, you know, I'm curious. I discovered that I am a dumbass. Because Young Royals has a very important Star Wars connection that I have failed to mention for 3 weeks.
Okay.
In the show, are you familiar with the plot of Young Royals at all?
I imagine it's about two young royals.
No, actually. Oh. So very quickly, the plot of Young Royals is the two main characters. One of them is like a commoner that's attending. It's about this like boarding school, and it's a gay love story. And one of these two is like this commoner that's attending the school on like a scholarship or whatever. It's basically the elite crossed with red, white, and royal blue, because the other one is the crown prince of Sweden.
Oh, and I didn't even know they had a prince. Okay.
Yeah, well, in this show they do.
Oh,
and he's the crown prince of Sweden. They fall in love, they get together, they break up, they get together, they break up. It's an ongoing thing. It's really good. But the queen of Sweden, so the mom of one of the characters, the crown prince, with whom he has a very fraught relationship, the mom is played by Pernilla August.
Okay.
Do you know that name offhand, or am I going to have to tell you who Pernilla August is?
You're going to have to remind me, but it does sound familiar.
She's only appeared in Star Wars 3 times. She is another mom in Star Wars. She's Shmi Skywalker.
Oh, that's right, because she is Swedish.
She is Swedish, yeah.
That's right.
She's in Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and the Clone Wars TV show as Shmi Skywalker.
Wow.
And I had no idea.
You just randomly saw her on screen. You were just like, that's the Queen of Sweden.
No, actually, I saw it on the cast list.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't recognize her in the show.
Oh, really?
Because her hair is different. Right. I figured it out. It's because her hair is different. It's like this sort of bob in the show. And then in the finale, at one point, she ties her hair back. And I went, oh, that's Shmi Skywalker.
You're like, that's Anakin's mom.
That's Anakin's mom. Anakin's mom, why are you being a bad mom in this show? We know you know how to do it. So that's my I am Boba the Fool. I did not realize that the mom in the show is also Anakin Skywalker's mom.
I love that.
All right. Well, now that we've vamped for 4 minutes ahead of this, what are we talking about today, Bradley?
This week we're talking about Star Wars Visions, episode titled The Elder, where a Jedi and his Padawan pursue a dark and powerful presence. Charles, would you like some information about The Elder?
I would love some information about a show in in which the Jedi almost discover that the Sith are back and then bungle it at the last minute. A thing that definitely could happen. And in fact, in Legends, did happen several times.
I'm pretty sure this is like basically the same plot of Phantom Menace. It's just like with slight changes.
I'm making
and a, lot
a
of
joke
stuff
about the Acolyte. You're not on social media, so you've completely missed this. But when the Acolyte trailer came out, a lot of people suddenly got very, very interested in the specific wording of one line from Ki-Adi-Mundi and the Phantom Menace that says that he thinks the Sith are extinct and haven't been seen for millennia. And people are very mad about the fact that the Acolyte is totally going to break canon now, because clearly the people who are writing the Acolyte never bothered to actually watch Star Wars. And thus, although one of them actually did not know anything about Star Wars, but presumably the showrunner did not ever watch a Star Wars and therefore had no idea what was going on. Yeah. Apparently this is the logic taking form in some corners of the internet, because people are stupid and they interpret a trailer that's cut together to generate hype.
Right. You have no idea what's going on.
You have no idea what's going to happen in this show.
Right.
Shut the fuck up, people.
As far as you know, that's like a random Jedi person whose lightsaber turns red randomly for some reason. Like, we don't know the plot. Like, there's literally no explanation because we have no idea.
We know nothing.
Right.
We don't even know. Yeah. Like, we know that it's about, they've said it's about how the Sith infiltrate the Republic, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the Sith are even going to be in the show. It might be about the systems that failed to allow the Sith to do that. We don't know. We don't know what's in this show. And literally the trailer opens in the first 10 seconds of the goddamn trailer. They turn to the audience and say, so everything you're seeing with your eyeballs, do not trust that. Your eyes are lying to you. That's the point of the show, you stupid terminally online fucks. I don't need to have to explain media literacy of a goddamn trailer 18,000 times because you stupid motherfuckers keep misinterpreting a trailer that's deliberately designed to be misinterpreted because you're stupid and you live in Facebook comment sections and you haven't given me peace since the goddamn Last Jedi came out fucking over 5 years ago. Leave me alone. Google is free. Read Darth Bane Rule of Two. It's right fucking there. God, I can always tell, Bradley, who has actually read Legends books and who has watched some shitty, unwashed mouth breather recite a lore video on YouTube and then learn to parrot that back in a tweet to me. I have learned to figure this out because these people are not smart, these people are not intelligent, and these people have no ability to think for themselves whatsoever.
I'm just like, they're going to be really disappointed when they go see The Phantom Menace in theaters and then they rewatch the scene where the Jedi Council doesn't believe the guy who literally saw Darth Maul with his fucking eyeballs and was like, hey, this guy is probably a Sith, and they're all like, nah, you're a fucking idiot, and they don't believe anything until he fucking dies, and then they're just like, well, I guess,
well, we definitely believe it,
right?
And also, like, that's their basis in the film for figuring it out, like, oh well, yeah, he managed to kill a Jedi, so like, guess he must be a Sith. Guys, the Phantom Menace is not a serious film. It's not a serious art film.
I don't understand why people don't understand.
But also, here's what irks me about that is, I'm like, whenever one of these things happens, and it has been happening forever in Star Wars, the reaction of shitty fans and even good fans, I'm gonna say this too, there's a lot of people that I know that fall into this trap that I consider to be very, very good at media analysis and very, very good at media literacy. Even they will fall into this trap. So this is not specifically a shitty, toxic, unwashed fan thing. Is to look at something, look at anything, whether it be a trailer, a piece of marketing, a piece of media, what have you, and their reaction to seeing something that doesn't immediately on the surface make sense is, this doesn't make sense. Not, this doesn't make sense, I wonder if there's a reason for that. Either within the context of the world itself or the story itself, or deliberately so by the creator, by the artist. That's a thing that I've noticed people have fallen into. And also, again, like, it's a fucking trailer, guys. It's a fucking trailer.
It's a trailer. Literally, people said that about Rogue One's trailer. Like, and they would be like, that stuff wasn't in the movie.
They did say shit about Rogue One.
But that's what I'm saying.
Sure.
It's just a trailer.
Yeah, they did.
anything.
They said shit about everything. You are so lucky to have deleted your Twitter. I can't. And Instagram is not like the way Instagram proliferates content to you. It's not that kind of content that makes it to you. It's different content that makes it. In my case, it's a lot of Solangelo art from the Percy Jackson series.
Yeah, I feel like TikTok.
That's
like
what Instagram feeds me.
I feel like TikTok is my new Twitter. Like, it's like I can only get my information from there now. And when it's something I don't like, then I immediately block the creator, or I immediately like say, like, even though it doesn't work when you hold down the video and it says I don't like this sound, or
that doesn't fucking work at all.
Doesn't actually work. But if I get some awful Star Wars take or something, I do block that person because I'm like, no, I don't. Why?
No, I don't want to see. You're not getting my view. Gotta protect your peace. You gotta protect
your peace. 100% Like what you like, people. Don't listen to creepy people online who have bad takes about Star Wars. Just have your own fucking opinion, and just if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. Just keep it to yourself.
If I dislike you or I don't know you, I will block you. This has been my policy. If I know you and I kind of like you, like we're cool but we're not like friends,
you'll still block. Aren't
you? I'll mute you.
I'll mute. Okay. So you're right. That's
if you notice that I've stopped interacting with your posts for many months on end, I muted you because you said something stupid and then forgot to take you off of mute.
That's so funny. I do the same thing. If I really like straight guys on Instagram, like I find out that they're straight and then I block them because I'm like, ew, I don't want to follow a straight guy, and then I block them.
What's the point in this?
They're hot.
I'm just casting my attention into the void.
Right.
Good lord. We have completely tangented because
getting back to the acolyte. Oh god. Okay.
I'm sorry, Bradley. That rant was in my soul for
It's good.
That's content. That's content, baby. Me getting really mad. And I gotta say, if you are listening to this podcast, that was not about you. None of the people in Facebook comment sections who I'm talking about listen to this show.
Back to the Elder.
Anyway, the Elder. a short about the Jedi confronting someone who's pretty explicitly a Sith and then fucking up and not figuring out that it's a Sith at the last minute.
Right. So, would you like to know who wrote and directed this episode?
I would love to know some information that's not me being super mad about people talking about the Acolyte trailer.
This episode was written and directed by Masahiko Otsuka. He is known for Cyberpunk Edgerunners, Gurren Lagann, and Neo Genesis Evangelion. I don't know how to say that.
Did you fucking mispronounce Neon Genesis Evangelion, the most famous anime of all time?
Is it Gellion or Angelin?
Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, it's not like evangelical? Like, that's not how you say it?
No, it's Evangelion.
What the fuck is Evangelion?
I don't know.
Is that just a name?
I can't explain the show.
Okay, well, don't go into a rant about an anime that I don't care about, but...
Okay, it's...
I apologize to
you. You are so lucky. You are so lucky that certain people I know do not have the time to listen to this podcast. You are so lucky because you would be getting DMs about not knowing Neon Genesis Evangelion.
I like it. So that's who wrote and directed this episode. That's what they're responsible for. So if that makes sense.
Fun fact for you, my best friend's favorite anime is Gurren Lagann. So I have watched the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty okay.
It was pretty
indicative of the... It was exactly what I thought it was going to be.
The only thing I saw on this list was... I thought Cyberpunk was like a game.
Let me Google this really quick.
I'm assuming I guess they turned it into an anime, or a show or something, but I thought it was a game. Or maybe the game's based on the anime. I don't know.
It is a... Oh, Cyberpunk Edgerunners? What? Yeah, no, that's a tie-in to the game.
Ah, okay. So now it all makes sense.
Yeah, no, I immediately saw the trailer and I went, yeah, he directed a few things that we've actually already talked about on this show.
Oh, like?
Fruits Basket.
Oh.
The 2001 TV series. He's the director of the opening of Kill la Kill, a show that we've talked about on this show before.
I guess it makes sense because the studio that made The Elder is also Studio Trigger, which we talked about earlier.
Yes, we were getting to that.
Yeah, so I guess that makes a lot of sense because everything, I feel like with at least this first season of Visions, everybody's pretty interconnected. Like, it's pretty close. Everybody's cousins with each other on this first season because everybody's been in something that somebody else has done at least kind of close to them.
Yeah, and we're actually getting to a point now. This one and Akakiri were both shows that were directed by, done by the same studio as another one we've already talked about, which saves us a little bit of time, which is why I can go on a 10-minute rant about the Acolyte trailer at the beginning of the episode.
That's why I wasn't mad about it at first, because I was like, well, technically we already talked about Studio Trigger. We don't really need to
elaborate too much. Then you never stopped me. Like, you never cut me off. You yes-anded me and I kept going.
That's improv, baby.
What are podcasters if not improv comedians, but worse somehow?
So true. Also, yeah, no, that's pretty much it. We're just
improv comedians.
Like, I mean, we're not funny, but we might be improvers. That's for sure.
We are improv comedians crossed with graduate students who are actually really bad at research, but have to give a presentation the next morning anyway.
Who also took a broadcast journalism class when they went to a state school and they hated it because it was literally about researching and finding information and facts before reporting.
I loved being a journalist. I loved it, actually. I wish I could have done it more, but that was not in the cards for me, although I deeply appreciate my time with the local newspaper when I worked there. Yeah, Studio Trigger, we already talked about them. They did talk, I watched the behind the scenes, they did say that basically they wanted to showcase the range of what Studio Trigger could do, and so the two co-founders of Trigger each directed a short.
Okay. So one of them did the twins, and one of them did this one.
One of them did the twins, one of them did this one.
Cool. I mean, yeah, it's definitely different than the twin, like, by a lot. Because when I saw Studio Trigger, I did not think it, I was like, this is the same?
They also said that this particular co-founder, Masahiko, this was going to be the last thing that he directed. So part of why it is the way it is because this is kind of a send-off to his animation career. Oh. He talked about in the behind the scenes, like, he was more like Dan when he started his career. Dan is more based off, like, trying to capture that when he was very young and he was very energetic. And Taijin is much more like when he's older and where he is at now. And it looks like, according to IMDb, now he was the writer of Cyberpunk Edgerunners. So he does seem to still be involved with the studio, but as far as being a director, this is in fact the last thing that he did was this short. He did say in the behind the scenes that he would be willing to come back to Star Wars if they offered him a chance to do another one. He would do more Star Wars, but other than that, he's pretty done.
Would you like to know who does the English voices for our characters in this?
Would love to know about the people who do the English voices.
Okay, so I'm gonna just say this up front: we have a very stacked English voice cast. You may not know all of them, but they are stacked, and it's because two of them have Disney trifectas and they aren't even trying.
Mind you, there are three people that have major. We go from all of the voice actors all of the time down to there are three.
Yeah, it's insane.
I don't think they even bothered to redub the kids. I think they just used the original.
Yeah, because you don't really need anything. Yeah, like, they don't speak.
So IMDb doesn't even have any kids, English voice cast kids listed.
Yeah, so they probably used the Japanese kids, yeah.
But we only really have three that we're going to talk about, which is good, because some of them we have a lot to talk about.
Starting with our Padawan character, Dan, was voiced.
It's going to be very confusing for me, by the way, to talk about a character named Dan, who is not my character named Dan, who I constantly think about.
I was like, wait. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you don't have a Dan in For Light and Dice. And then I was like, wait, oh, your book. And then I was
Beach House, one of the main characters is named Dan.
Well, because I was also thinking of this as like a young person character. And then your Dan character is not a young person character.
No, he's middle-aged.
Yeah, so I was like,
47, 48 years old.
That's so funny.
It's the opposite.
You threw me off now that I think, now I'm thinking about the
starting with our Dan for the purposes of this.
Yes.
It's worse. You know what's worse? You know what's fucking worse, Bradley, while I'm on this tangent? So one of the new Jedi members of the Jedi Council in Phase 3 of the High Republic, because they've had to replace some Jedi Council members because they died, because this is Star Wars, is named Rai Kisaka. It's so confusing. I read Edge of Darkness, and I'm like, I immediately distrust this character, who's not an untrustworthy character. Like, Rai Kisaka is a reasonable guy, but I have Rai Thompson in my head.
No, I immediately don't like that person.
I immediately do not trust that person to make good decisions.
That's a bad character.
Returning, Oh my lord. Sorry to Rai Kisaka. You are associated in my brain with Henry Thompson, the king of making shitty, impulsive, reckless decisions. Speaking of shitty, impulsive, reckless decisions, do we want to talk about Dan in the act the Elder? Fuck! Fuck me in the dick.
You're
Okay.
gonna say the Acolyte every single time.
I'm gonna say the Acolyte every single time.
Yes, Dan from The Elder is voiced by Jordan Fisher. Jordan Fisher is known for lots of Disney Channel shows and movies. He is basically a Disney person, so I'm not even gonna go into all of his stuff, but he's also one of the voices in Pixar's Turning Red. He's currently appearing on Broadway in the show Hadestown, and he was also in two episodes of Teen Wolf. So he's basically
I'm
an
glad you
all-star.
brought up the Teen Wolf thing. I did note that.
Yeah, Jordan Fisher is so funny. Most people would know him for the meme of every year around the holidays, this TikTok kind of rolls around. It's a video of the Disney Channel stars singing, "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" And he sings this, like, he belts out this part and "Do You Want to Build a Snowman?" And the joke is always like, he came to work that day because he needed the money and everybody else is just kind of there. And he does most of the work. And it's so funny watching that meme video. Like, it's hilarious. And he's so good at singing. So, like, I'm actually shocked that this wasn't a musical because I was like, Jordan Fisher can sing really well. And I'm like, I want to see a Star Wars
Did
musical.
it absolutely worth watching the behind the scenes clip because he has a moment in the behind the scenes where they're recording him and he sees where they are in the booth because they have the actual thing playing clips from the thing playing.
Sure.
He sees Dan's lightsaber for the first time and he gets really excited that it's blue.
I love that.
I'm like, yes, I love to see it. Tell us about who else is in this short, Bradley.
Next up, we have Tajin. How do you say that?
Tajin.
Tajin. Tajin is
Tajin, I think, is how you say
Dan's
it.
Jedi Master. He is played by David Harbour. You may know him for Stranger Things, Marvel's Black Widow. I also wrote down for gay purposes, he was in Q-Force and
He
Brokeback
was.
Mountain.
He was. Sorry, what?
He was apparently in Brokeback Mountain. I don't know as what. Obviously, he wasn't as famous then. This was a long time ago, but he was in Brokeback Mountain. So either he was a character in there or somewhere. Don't know what his role was, but that's a gay
That
movie.
is
So there you go.
in fucking sane.
But yeah, he also, like I said before, he's one of our Disney trifectas. Jordan Fisher is not a Disney trifecta because he has never been in a Marvel thing, but David Harbour is because he was in a Disney show called Big City Greens or whatever on it's an animated show on Disney Channel, so that counts as his Disney thing. So
It
there
does
you go.
count. We'll give him that.
Yep.
Just scrolling through his IMDb page to look for things that I recognize. He was in an episode of Elementary. He's apparently
Oh.
played Dracula before
Oh, I didn't
in
know
the
that.
movie Awake. What the fuck is this movie? Why is he credited as Dracula in the movie Awake starring Hayden Christensen?
Oh, there's a connection I didn't
What
know.
in the actual fuck?
Wait, Hayden Christensen's in a Dracula movie? And you didn't know this?
I don't know why he is credited as Dracula in this movie. I'm
Maybe it's
gonna
a nickname.
watch this movie. Hold on. I'm gonna watch this movie this week
And
and
report back to us.
report
Okay,
back.
good.
I'm gonna
Okay.
make a note here, right
Okay.
here in my sticky notes.
Because that
I'm
is a
gonna
weird.
write watch away and report back.
You're
There
gonna
we
watch
go.
this whole movie and
I'm
be like,
gonna watch
he's not
this
in it.
movie and we are gonna find out
I love it.
what in the actual fuck he is doing here, credited as Dracula.
I kind of love that. I'm very excited for the next episode. Moving right along.
Now, David Harbour is the most credited person in this short, right, Bradley? Surely there cannot be someone coming along who has more fucking credits than David Harbour.
Prepare yourself. This next actor, I check. It has been acting since the 1950s, first of all.
He was 92 years old when they made Star Wars Visions,
Just
season
throwing that
one.
out there, 460 credits, approximately. 1950s, guys. Like this, he has been around the block and back again, and then went back around the block one more time just to per se measure. James Hong is playing the elder or credited as old man, which is I thought was weird, but he has literally been acting since the 1950s. He was most recently in Everything Everywhere All at Once. You may or may not have seen the movie. He has also, I mean, I'm just picking and choosing things. He was in the Kung Fu Panda franchise. He was also in the Turning Red franchise with Pixar. He was in that movie. And then he's also a Disney trifecta, as well as he's also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where he plays, get this, Ming-Na Wen's father, William May. Melinda May's father in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is Fennec Shand. So there's your, like, three times removed Star Wars degrees of Kevin Bacon. I don't even know what that is, but it's like, it's wild. Now, that's not his only, quote, Star Wars connection. Is not just Visions or being Fennec Shand's father in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What else is he?
He has done a few different things. One I did not know, one I did know. The one I knew for sure was he was in Star Wars Rebels, and autocorrect completely changed his name. So you're going to have to say his name because I can't say it right now because I don't have it pulled up.
As Morrigan.
As Morrigan. Okay, yeah. Sorry, my spell check fucked up his name.
I had to Google to save Bradley's ass really fast. Yes, in three episodes of Star Wars Rebels, he is the voice of As Morrigan.
And apparently, he's also in two unreleased episodes of The Clone Wars. He was supposed to be an alien who was supposed to make a deal with Count Dooku to give him a giant kyber crystal or something.
Oh, this is Crystal Crisis in Utapau.
Right. So yeah. He's credited as the storyboard for the episodes, but he's not, obviously, because they never made the episodes.
They didn't finish them.
Right. But he would have been in that.
They released something. For those people who may not be aware, when The Clone Wars was initially canceled, the way that they sort of handled it in the merger was that the episodes that were done or almost done were picked up by Netflix, because Disney Plus was not a thing at the time. Netflix basically said, hey, we'll take the first half of this season that's basically already done. Some of it needs some finishing touches, and then it ends on the Yoda Moriband episodes. And the back half of it and some of the stuff that they were working on was released as animatics, or unfinished sort of model work, and wherever it was in the stage of the production, they packaged it up and they released it as something part of the Clone Wars legacy project. And so they also, this is where we get Son of Dathomir, the comic strip, because that was supposed to be a 4-episode arc that dealt with what happened after Maul was captured and how he got uncaptured. And also, like, that's where Mother Talzin dies. And then also, most famously out of the same project, we got Dark Disciple, a novel which will probably be relevant the week we're recording this.
We'll find out, I guess, in a couple days.
We'll find out in a couple days.
We'll be very surprised.
Yeah, James Hong's a fucking legend. My favorite part of the behind the scenes documentary on this short was when they're in the Zoom call recording his lines and everyone's applauding and he says, no, hold your applause, just give me money. I'm like, yes.
I love that.
This is a man who gets it.
I mean, yeah, he's in his 90s. He's like, nah, I'm good. Like, I have the accolades.
Good.
I need the money now.
Give me the fucking money.
I love that for him.
Very stacked voice cast.
I thought so. I was very shocked because I hate to say this, but this is actually one of my least favorite episodes. And to have such a stacked cast and like to now that I've done like the research for it, it's like I appreciate the episode more. However, I still don't love the episode. It's not my favorite. Yeah, it's just not up there for me personally. It's not because of the plot or anything. I thought the actual plot itself was decent enough. I mean, it's like, you know, it's two Jedis who bind a Sith and then they're like, oh, gotta kill him. And then they do. And then they're done. Like, that's pretty, it's a very basic plot, actually, if you really break it down.
That was something I appreciated about it, because I kind of went through a journey myself. We're skipping over the animation for the moment because I want to say this, but we'll come back to the animation. The journey I went through was, oh, I am not as like sucked into this as I am some of the others. But then I realized that was kind of the point of it, is that it was more of a meditative piece. It was more of something that you're meant to just sort of sit with. It's not something that's trying, like the Ninth Jedi had 18 million years of plot.
Right.
Or Village Bride had several moving pieces. This one's supposed to be a very simple story that taps into something very, very fundamental to the artist that is making it. And I went, you know what? I appreciate that as a piece of art. And I also enjoy seeing basically, again, like TOB1, it's a morality tale. There's a moral lesson here, is that Dan runs in blindly. And the director talks about this in the behind the scenes, talks about how this is like a classic Star Wars problem. And they even show clips of like Luke arguing with Obi-Wan and Yoda because he's trying to run off to Empire, to the Cloud City, and the Empire Strikes Back. And so I did come to appreciate it. I wasn't as like super into this one as I was into some of the others, but I did appreciate the artistry. And speaking of the artistry, circling back around, Bradley, what did you think of the animation before you really get into the story?
I actually didn't like it.
You didn't?
I didn't think it was that great. I liked the like the backgrounds and the paintings and stuff, but it was honestly a little too muted for me. I didn't like the muted tones of this episode. The only color comes when, again, very similar to like the duel, when they actually use their lightsabers and stuff. That's where most of the color comes from.
Right.
In this episode, which I appreciated, like, especially when during the fights, you know, it visually it looks very cool, especially in the rain, and you know, the intensity of the colors in the rain. I really like that part of the animation. I just thought that, like, I think it's because the first half of the episode is so dialogue heavy, or like they're just sitting there talking. It's not very interesting to look at because they're just kind of talking and they're sitting in a spaceship and their mouths are just kind of moving and they're not really doing a lot. So there's not
and
much.
And then they
to
land on
at.
The planet and then they're right. talking and then they have the scene where they're moving around through and there's these occasional moments, but then they're talking into comlinks. It really doesn't like kick into action gear until Dan runs into the Elder.
Exactly. And I think that was, I'm not going to say it's like a fault, like because I get what you're saying about how you're supposed to kind of sit with the information that they're giving you and kind of think more about it. I thought visually though, if you are going to do that, you got to make something else happening other than just the light speed, you know, stars moving pattern in front of them while they're talking. Cause like, to me, that's not enough. Like that's just a standard for Star Wars, like to have that. And I don't know if I like that being the only thing that's interesting to look at in the scene while they're talking. Like I think I need something else. I don't know. I can't explain how to make it better. I can only tell you what I don't like.
Yeah. I think for me, I loved the visual look of most of this because most of it is on that like rainy planet.
Yeah.
I wasn't wild about the cockpit stuff, but once they got on the planet, I was like, I like the look of this. The character animations, like the facial expressions were very emotive. I wonder if it's because they're Jedi that they don't have a lot of extraneous movement in this. It's all very like subtle and very restrained. And like, again, I appreciate the artistry that went into this. And this is clearly an artistic vision. It wasn't as fun to watch as some of the others, like visually to watch with my eyeballs. And that is not to say that something has to be super fast, super energetic all of the time to like be better, because that's not how that works at all. But it was more of a, okay, when are we going to get to the fight type thing, as opposed to something like The Village Bride, which was again the same sort of meditative sort of thing. But that one I think accomplished a little bit more, allowing you to get lost in the story that's currently happening, not thinking about where the story is going to be going and building up to that.
Right.
And that's the difference for me that I think between those two shorts. And also even the duel was like, I don't know if I can really compare those two, because the duel was like, it had action stuff even in the build up to the titular duel.
Yeah. It really did. Yeah. And even though it was in black and white and it wasn't like there wasn't a lot going on visually because it is black and white, you still were getting a sense of like something's about to happen, like, or there's things that are about to happen. Like there was a suspense almost. I feel like with this, they were trying to do that, but I wasn't quite getting the suspense in that. I was just kind of like, oh, they're just kind of there. Then he kind of talks to the villagers for a second and they're like, yeah, there's a creepy old man here. Probably should go find him. Okay, great. Like, let's go up the mountain. I'm up in the mountain. It's probably a lightsaber that killed this animal. Oh yeah. Well, it's probably something. It turns around. Boom. That's when the actual action starts, when he shows up. So I feel like, yeah, it's a lot of lead up to something that I felt like they could have gotten to quicker with a little less of the pacing was just off to me. I think that maybe that's what it was.
I think for me, it was less about the pacing and more about the fact that Dan and Tajin, who I really like, I like both of these characters a lot, but their discussions were a lot more like philosophical and respectful. I think it lacked a sense of character urgency in their conflict.
Right.
Like, because the central moment of the fight is right at the beginning when Tajin's like, Dan, you need to run away. Like, you need to get out of there. And Dan's like, nah, fuck that. I'm going to fight this guy because I'm young and crave adventure, and doesn't realize that the adventure excitement of Jedi craves not these things. And then promptly proceeds to get his ass beat into the ground by this old man. And I thought that if there had been a little more pushback, like, they have these conversations, multiple conversations, but I think the tone of it and how they're delivered and how they're written doesn't lend to that same sense of urgency, like, and how the character is making this choice within the context of the narrative that they've set up. Because and you know, it was always kind of a given that Dan was going to make a reckless choice like this. It was always kind of a given that his master was going to come and get him. Like, even if I know something that's, you can write a thing in such a way that even though you know where it's going to go, based on the premise alone, you can still be engaged with it by watching the interactions between the characters. And while I think Dan and Tajin are both good, well-realized characters, I think the lack of, like, conflict between a note of conflict between the two, I think would have made it a little bit more tense for me as the viewer, as opposed to me watching this and going, yeah, that's basically how I expected it was going to go down.
Yeah, because I think Dan is, like, whereas he's supposed to be this Ezra kind of Anakin character of, like, I'm kind of hot-headed, I'll do whatever I want. He also is, like, too respectful to his master.
That,
like,
that was what I was saying, yeah.
I wasn't getting the angst from him. Like, I wasn't getting too much. Like, yeah, he's young, but, like, that's all it is. Like, it's not as much as, like, he's rebelling against his master. He's just kind of a young person that just doesn't make good choices all the time, and that's just how it is. I mean,
I don't think they would have had to make him, like, angsty. I think they just would have had to make him too eager. And there was, right, you know, conflict between him and Nan, but it wasn't like, I didn't think it was strong enough to get that overarching tension,
right,
that I really needed in that. Or even, you know, something where it's not clear whether Tajin's going to go try to rescue him, or maybe offer some sort of choice, like he could stay with the ship and he can learn about the Sith, or he can go get Dan, who has gotten himself into this stupid situation. He chooses to go get Dan and let the information about the Sith get destroyed, like it does at the end of the short anyway.
Yeah, and I also think that, like, there needed to be more of a sacrifice or slash, like, lesson for Dan to learn, other than just don't go attacking things when you're not supposed to. Like, it needs to be more like I honestly think that his master should have died in this battle, like, trying to rescue him in some kind, and then he avenges his master in some kind of way, and that's his lesson to learn, like, oh, you know, if you're hot-headed or whatever, you don't listen, and then, like, bad things can happen and people can get hurt. And it's like, I don't know, so maybe there was needed to be more of an intent thing here, because he kind of just, like, got saved by his master, and it was kind of like, well, maybe don't do that next time. Well, there's not really going to be a next time, because they're not really Sith anymore, so it's not really that important of a lesson, I guess, because they're not really around. Maybe we don't know, because he blows up a ship, so we don't really know if there's more. Like, I don't know.
I think the important thing for me at the end of the day is this is a story that this particular creative wanted to tell about his time, you know, how he feels about himself. And I do think that it is important to keep in mind, like, even if, you know, we're sitting here saying maybe this would have made it work a little better for me, maybe that would have made it work a little better for me, this is the story that the creative wanted to tell. And I am glad that that exists, just so we can look at it and say, what is this creative? That's the nice thing about things made by actual creatives, is you can look at them and be like, what is this creative actually trying to say here? Like, and I think watching the behind the scenes for me and realizing that, oh, this is him at different points in his career interacting, that really kind of opened my eyes to, okay, this is what this short is supposed to be doing. This makes sense now that this is maybe written the way that it is written. I also did discover while just sort of Googling stuff that apparently the Elder is based on a real guy.
The Elder is based on a real, like, old man? Like,
what? The old man is based on a real guy.
Okay.
It's a dude named Miyamoto Musashi.
Okay.
I only had time before recording this episode to read through his Wikipedia article, but apparently he is a very prolific Japanese swordsman and ronin who is undefeated. He was renowned through stories of his unique, I'm quoting Wikipedia here, quote, renowned through stories of his unique double-bladed swordsmanship and undefeated record in his 61 duels. Next is 33. The next highest number of undefeated in duels was 33. He was undefeated in 61.
It's so weird how they like just have that information like still. Like they're like, hey, this guy
because won he wrote a book.
Duels. Yeah, oh, okay.
Because he wrote a book.
Got it.
That's to spoil this Wikipedia article. I'm not gonna recap the whole thing because I just read the Wikipedia article and then was like, okay, that's enough for me to bring on today. But he wrote a book, apparently, about his time.
Now, I will say that's the one thing I like design-wise about this was the Elder's swords or lightsabers were the katana kind of style, but he had two of them, and how the Jedi characters have just regular lightsabers. I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen that other than just actual Star Wars with the darksaber versus like regular lightsabers, but that's really the only thing I can think of other than, because I feel like in all these other shorts, they're either stylized to be a katana style, like flat blade, or they're just a regular lightsaber. There's never like a mixture of the two,
a combination of the two.
I feel like this is the first time we've seen like combo.
I like how they look unstable. Yes. At the base.
Very Kylo-esque.
Well, they're meant to resemble, if you look at pictures, hold on, I'm gonna drop in chat. We're gonna rarely use our rarely used chat feature, but I'm gonna drop a picture from Miyamoto Musashi's Wikipedia page into the chat. Look at the way his swords are. You see how his swords kind of have a round base at the bottom of them, and he also has the long sword and he has a short companion sword.
I see that. Yeah,
and that base at the bottom is meant to be, I think, in how the Elder's lightsaber is designed.
Gotcha. I'm trying to pull up the character design gallery, or like they pull on starwars.com. if you go to each episode guide for Visions, they have a concept gallery and they'll have like the different character designs, and I'm looking at the one with their lightsabers in front of them, and you can see all the different lightsabers, and it's really cool how you're right, it looks like it's got that base at the bottom, but it's like a little unstable. It's really cool design wise. It's amazing.
Yeah, and it's clearly modeled after this guy and these swords, because he would fight with the twin swords. He almost is kind of doing an Ahsoka Tano thing where he has the main one and then he has the shorter one. That's kind of what's going on here. Apparently, he also spent many years studying Buddhism and swordsmanship. He was an accomplished artist, sculptor, and calligrapher. Records also show that he had architectural skills. This episode is quickly just turning into me just reading
Wikipedia.
Miyamoto Musashi's Wikipedia article and being like, this dude sounds so cool.
Also, I did want to know about his ship randomly. It does
it kind of look like an Inquisitor to you?
I was just about to say it vaguely looked like the Inquisitor ship from Kenobi, or the Obi-Wan Kenobi series.
An Inquisitor. Like, I thought it looked like the sixth brother to me. It's really cool looking.
So Charles,
yes.
How would you see this particular show moving forward? What would this medium be to continue this story of these two characters?
Well, Bradley, I'm so glad you asked me this question. Because our friend Hope over at J Guys and Jedi actually was writing a piece of High Republic fan fiction about Loden Greatstorm and Bell Zedifar.
How did I know you were going to bring up this character?
I am absolutely going to bring this up because she wrote this fan fiction, and in one arc, these two characters show up.
Shut up.
Yes, she into her High Republic fanfic as characters running around in the High Republic, and it would work. I would bring them into the High Republic era. That's how I would do it. I would do exactly what Hope did.
You'd bring them into like their own story together with them.
I would bring them into the High Republic era somehow.
I like it.
Because they run around the Outer Rim, and there's a big, like the relationship between the Outer Rim and the Core and the Jedi in particular is a big theme in the High Republic.
Sure.
And that's what I would do. I would bring them into canon. I maybe wouldn't want to see it continue on its own, but I would love to see them as characters in a broader piece. And I think the High Republic would work well. And if you go read Fire and Thread on AO3, you can see how someone might execute putting them in the High Republic.
Oh, I was
plug, thought, plug for hoax fan fiction.
I was like, wait a minute, fan fiction. I was like, oh, that's right. Oh,
yeah, because this whole segment is just me plugging Hope.
Plugging Hope.
Generally. Like, also, please follow Hope's stuff on Dark Side of the Force, Geeky Waffle, and Collider.
Yeah, I definitely see them with those two characters. Funny enough, if you just replace the character design slightly, like it is these two characters from the High Republic, like you basically, it could be the same thing. I mean,
you could tell a story like this with Bell.
Yeah, and you just replace them.
I think this is kind of the point that Hope was, if I'm remembering the fic correctly,
yeah,
that kind of the contrast between the compare and contrast between the Loden and Bell relationship and the Dan and Tajin relationship was something she was exploring, which was really interesting. It's been a while since I've actually read this arc. I just wanted to plug that it exists, and I remember it being very good.
I'm gonna take kind of like half of what you said and make it my idea, and instead of like adding them into canon, I'm going to just do what I just said and replace them with the character of Bell and Loden, and then just make this their story, and then just say like they went to a planet at one point and they met this elder Sith person that they didn't know what it was yet, and they were just like, you know what I mean, like I would literally do a story. Maybe it's their own novel, maybe it's their own comic book arc or whatever you want to make it, and just flesh out this story. This is like the bare bones of the story, and then like enhance it a little bit, like maybe make it a little bit more of a interesting plot of like this guy, like we need to find this guy because he's doing some bad stuff or whatever, like, and he's not just some random guy challenging
here's a thought, Bradley. Maybe we could take this base concept, right, of the Jedi investigating some dark presence that they aren't sure what it is, and maybe we could expand it out to a full show. Maybe I don't know, they could set it at the end of the High Republic era. Possibly they could cast Trinity from the Matrix in it. For some reason, yeah. She's here.
Sure, why not?
Doing martial arts in the trailer. I love when Star Wars is martial arts. I love when Star Wars is like, fuck it, we're doing like crazy flips and shit.
We're doing it.
What are we doing next week, Bradley?
Next week, we are going to be doing this. I think it's the second to last one. I think we're almost done.
I'm very excited to revisit this one because this was your least favorite one.
Oh, that's right. We're doing Lop and Ocho.
Lop and Ocho.
Okay, that's right. So we'll see if my mind has changed since
if you've evolved revisited as a person. Yeah.
See if I have gotten over my fear of the furry people that have clearly taken over Star Wars. We'll see.
We'll see if you are able to... look past the designs. Oh Lord, I am very excited to revisit it. Because we're now firmly in the back half, and the first time I watched this is the point where I had checked out and I was just watching it. So even the Elder, I'm like, I appreciate this a lot more now than I did.
Yeah, I'm excited to do these last couple ones because I'm gonna be honest, like the Elder, Lop and Ocho, and Akakiri are some of my least favorite of the first season. I feel like we've hit that part of I liked what I liked in the beginning, and then now we're at the part where I don't like any of it, and so I'm curious to see how my opinion has changed now that we're revisiting, and see if I like any of these next ones going forward.
All right, well, if you are interested in other stuff that Hope and I are doing with relation to the High Republic, you can follow me on the Star Wars TTRPG podcast for Light and Dice. Hope is also a cast member on that. Loden, Greatstorm, and Belzedivar have not shown up yet, but we'll see if that happens. I also write a series of gay thriller novels on Kindle Unlimited called Beach House Studios. You can find it there. On the Bradley side of things, we promote one show that Bradley works on at a time. You can watch a bunch of shows he's worked on Bravo and Peacock. Right now we are still doing Married to Medicine season 10, which should be over by now.
I think it's probably over by now, but I have a new show possibly coming out in April, so maybe we can start plugging my new show then. I don't know, they haven't released the release date yet, but we'll see.
Fingers crossed. Is this an officially announced show? Can we say the name of the show yet, or do we have to hide?
I'm gonna give it one more week because I don't actually know if they've announced it or not. I mean, I know they have because I read an article about it, so I feel like it's knowledge. I just don't have, like, I can't confirm with like 100% possibility. I don't want to be the one breaking the news on a Star Wars podcast about this.
Get a very brief boost in attention for the Star Wars podcast.
Right. I think either I might just have to wait until Visions is over before I plug it, just to be on the safe side. And then we'll maybe
when we switch to Bad Batch, we'll switch to a new show.
Yeah.
But for now, Married to Medicine, season 10, and run the socials. Thank you for listening to this episode of Gold Squadron Gaze. Did Charles fuck something up? Email us at goldsquadrongaze@gmail.com to let us know. You can also find us on Twitter at @GoldSquadGaze, and you can find us on TikTok and Instagram at @GoldSquadronGaze. You can also find us on YouTube at our Gold Squadron Gaze YouTube channel, where we post full episodes of this show. Finally, if you liked the show, don't forget to rate us and give us a review on your favorite podcast platform. That allows other people to find our show. As always, thank you for listening to Gold Squadron Gaze, and we'll see you next week.
See, I could see you being like a journalist. I wanted to be a weatherman when I was a kid.
That explains so many things about you.
Because I feel like you don't actually have to do a lot of work. And you're just like kind of standing there being like, well, it's probably going to be sunny today. And whether or not it is, that's okay. Because I'm going to get it wrong half the time anyway.
Nothing I say matters.
Right. I love it.
Nothing actually, has honestly. Any stakes or consequences.